Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. After 2 years of eager anticipation, we're here to discuss season 2 of The Witcher, now available for streaming on Netflix. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of the Last Airbender and Avatar Aang. We've also checked out some Legend of Korra and uncovered the mysteries of Lovecraft Country. You can go ahead and check out our first season of The Witcher in your podcast feeds.
This week, we'll see the past and the future in one of Cirilla's visions, see the reunion of two very dear friends, and say goodbye to another friend in episodes 5 and 6 of season 2.
You know, sometimes our deepest hate is for the things we cannot change about ourselves. But one thing we will not change is our love of adult content. If you're here to chop it up with friends about your love of stuffed unicorns that seem to have mysteriously disappeared, like under mysterious circumstances, they're gone. You're in the right place. So tip your bard and control your chaos, because here we go.
So episode 5, Turn Your Back, starts with a woman mage named Lydia releasing the sorcerer Reince from prison. And we see a flashback of Yaskier performing. Shout out to the West Indian assistant in the bar who wishes she was deaf rather than having to listen to Burn Butcher Burn one more time.
Oh, it's so good.
It was really good.
You hear a little patois. She's like, listen, let me get out. I'm done with hearing this shit. But to his credit, like we were talking about offline, Yaskier has grown quite the following.
She's not about it, though. It's true. He's grown quite the following. But this woman says she wishes she was born without ears rather than having to listen to Burn Butcher Burn one more time.
Oh, man. I mean, she may be onto something. They may have to talk about this next season and more of a meta commentary. This is a very piss poor follow up to Toss a Coin. It's terrible.
It's not a terrible song. It's just no Toss a Coin, you know.
It's terrible in comparison, right?
Yes, it's terrible, right. In comparison. Exactly. But I mean, on its own, it's not a bad song.
And he's falling off. We're going to talk about Yen bumping into the lady in the streets, you know, but like that lady don't even know who she's talking about. So he's definitely falling off. In case she ain't walking around like, you heard, you seen the bard? And she's like, oh yeah. Nah, she's like, who? Anyway.
So Reince is in the audience watching Yaskier. And, you know, in present day, Yen is trying her best to figure out what happened to him. In the last episode that we saw him in, he mysteriously disappeared after putting Kahir and Yen on a ship. So it turns out that Yaskier is actually being tortured by Reince, who, you know, wants to know where Geralt and Cirilla are.
Shouts to Yaskier again. This guy is not easy to break. You know what I mean?
He does stand up to torture really well, but also, did he have any information to share? I don't think
so.
No,
he actually says that. He's all like, this guy grunts and I like make magical castles. I'm the bard. I'm talented as shit. All right? I make shit up. He doesn't tell me anything and he doesn't need help. Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal how much he holds up, but he has no information. He really doesn't know.
Yeah. I mean, this scene is awesome. It's almost taken directly from the book, except yeah. Yen has her magic.
Yeah.
So Yen interrupts this and saves him by spitting alcohol into Reince's face when he ignites a flame, basically burning him. He is from here out known as the Firefucker.
Hey, Firefucker. Oh, man, it's good.
So good.
At least it's better than Sparky Sparky Boom Man. It's better than that. Oh, man.
So despite escaping, Yen is captured shortly after by guards and finally gives in to the witch from the hut, aka the Deathless Mother, who tells her to bring Ciri to the shattered black door outside of Syntra. It will help her get her magic back.
And it's wild because you actually see her turn into Ciri, like, visually. Wow. What? Like, I heard Ciri's voice and I was like, what the hell just happened? And then I show Ciri. It's a great scene. What a great scene.
We will talk more about this whole plot line with Yen in a later date.
Oh, the plot line sucks. The scene, the way it's shot, is good. No, the plot line.
Yes, no. I mean, I didn't mean to sigh at what you were saying. I'm just sighing about the circumstances.
There's no reason Yen doesn't have magic. I don't understand it. I mean, in the book, when Reince is like torturing like Yaskier, the way that she comes in like Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, let me fuck some shit up style with magic. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, like, it's perplexing. But yes, I'm with you on all of that.
This whole plot line is tough. I have a hard time with it. But actually, this whole episode, while I think it's actually well-constructed as an episode, I have so many issues with the decisions that characters make in this episode.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, Ikir Morin, Vesemir, is trying to get, you know, this Witcher mutagen popping. First he goes to Triss and she's like, I don't think so. Then he goes to Cirilla and tells her basically that she can help make new Witchers.
Yeah, but wait, you're leaving a major part out by Triss, which I normally stand for Triss. But I'm going to, like, she's walking away after being like, no, it's too dangerous. You don't know what'll happen. And then she's like, you know what? On second thought, if she says it's okay, then if she agrees, then we'll do it. Triss,
that didn't happen.
Fuck?
Wait, that didn't happen yet, I thought. I thought that was their second conversation.
Oh, no, that's the very first. That's like the lead in as she's walking away.
It's tough.
it's tough.
I think, like, I was so distracted by Yen's plot line, I didn't even give much thought to Triss's.
I'm with you. It's tough because she's like very adamant for like the first 5 minutes of the conversation, and then Ciri keeps beating up the thing on the trial, and then she's like, you know, walking away, and I'm like, good for you, Triss. And then she undoes it all. She's like, yeah, if she says it's okay, then I guess it's okay. What?
What a mess. This whole thing is so perplexing to me for a number of reasons. So Vesemir does convince Ciri, and Ciri has one condition, that she wants to be the first Witcher that gets made.
Big Korra energy. Big Legend of Korra energy right here. Like, jumping into shit you don't know what the fuck you're jumping into. I'm just going to do it because I got this. Like, it's big Korra vibes.
Every time that this girl's been faced with a monster so far, she's been told to run. Like, what is going on? I don't understand this, but okay. So Triss then agrees to do it, and she makes the mutagen. But before she does that, when she finds out that Ciri's the one who wants to take it, she decides to persuade her not to do it because they don't know what's going to happen, right? Like, she could take this and it will be totally fine, but she could also take it and die. So she offers Ciri the opportunity to explore her genetic memories by having Triss enter her consciousness. And
so why do we do this whole like science fair project thing where she tried to like understand Ciri's magic before, if she could have done this? This is called magically burying the lead. Like, I don't understand why she didn't do this from the jump when Geralt was like, can you help me?
Well, I think it's a little bit about what she says, which is trust. I think that she was probably planning to do this all along, but she knew that Ciri didn't trust her yet.
That's
because
a good
it
call,
won't. She makes it clear to Ciri that it won't work if Ciri doesn't trust her.
Yeah, that's a good call. That is a very, very good call. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, I'm giving Triss the benefit of the doubt.
Which is growth, because you normally are out on Triss. Oh God.
So Ciri agrees, and she enters her consciousness. This whole sequence is very, very strange. Mm. It doesn't go as planned. Like, they end up back in Syntra, and it seems to be the Syntra of the past, but the memories are all jumbled. Like, Ciri sees Calanthe, she sees the children she used to play with. She also sees the Witchers right? Like, mm-hmm. they weren't there. She sees Kahir just sort of sitting in, like, a tavern. And then she sees her mother, Pavetta. Triss becomes alarmed when Pavetta speaks to them because, you know, like, what you see, they're not supposed to be interacting. It's not, mm-hmm. it's just supposed to be, like, a one-way thing. But they continue and see Ciri's parents talking about the prophecy and saying that they're going to leave by ship that evening with baby Ciri. Triss says that they should leave right away, but Ciri hears a voice and she follows it. And it takes her to a wounded elven woman cradling a baby. The mm-hmm. woman attacks Triss when Triss attempts to help her and heal her wound. And turns to Ciri and says, "Child of elder blood, child of wrath, the time of content is nigh. The world will die amidst the frost and be reborn of the new sun. Reborn of elder blood, of the seed that has been sown, a seed that will not sprout but will burst into flame." While this is happening, Ciri sees riders on horseback approaching and she becomes alarmed and scared. She doesn't seem too scared about the fact that, you know, Triss has been snatched.
Triss is getting choked out, man. Right. She's getting choked out.
Like, she seems like vaguely upset about that, but the riders really shake her to her core.
And and they're scary as shit.
Yeah, I mean, yes. But still, I think if basically a part of my dream was trying to choke out my friend, I would be also shook.
But Triss brought this shit on herself a little bit. I'm 180 a little bit on Triss at this point, because like, you're inside the consciousness of which you understood. You're like, shit is a little bit weird. You see a bleeding elf inside a fictitious consciousness world. Well, not fictitious, but in the consciousness of Ciri. It's not real. How do you think your magical powers are going to heal the wound? Why did you even go over there?
I mean, I have no rebuttal because it doesn't make any sense, but
let this be a warning to all you motherfuckers out here standing for the metaverse. This is what's gonna happen to you, okay? You're gonna go into these fake worlds, shit is gonna get weird and wonky, and you're gonna end up like Triss doing wild shit, reaching for fake wounds.
So okay, back on track. Ciri panics and she yells for Geralt and awakes from the session. Triss completely freaks out and says to her, "The seed that will burst into flame is you. You are going to destroy us all." Meanwhile,
but she was ready to give it the mutant gin. She's like, "Hey, just take the mutant gin." It's like, if you think it's okay, it's going to be okay. Fucking Triss.
I mean,
You're breaking my heart, Triss.
This whole episode is... The mages.
This is why he should have smashed two episodes. Like this is why Geralt and her should have hooked up a couple of episodes ago. I know I got a lot of flack for this.
Here we go.
Because now there's no turning back. Now you got to be out on Triss. Okay.
Well, let's just say the mages are not having a good showing this episode.
Not at all.
You know, trying to burn people for information, making deals with the Deathless Mother, turning on Ciri. Things are not going well for the mages.
No.
So meanwhile, Geralt's been away in Syntra. You know, he went to see Isdred and he uses Triss's name and explains that he needs help understanding what's happening with the monoliths. So the two of them go to see the monolith in Syntra and find the massive crater in the ground where Cirilla screened and destroyed it. And they decide to go down in the crater. Actually, Geralt decides to go down, and Isdred's like, "I'm going with you."
He starts geeking out. This changes everything, Witcher.
Like, as a person who's more bookish by nature, I deeply related to him because I was like, "I would totally do this."
Yeah, of course. You've been studying this shit for mad long. Like, you've been studying this shit forever, and now, like, you see something that's totally, like, opposite of what you understand. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm going with you.
Yeah, yeah. So they go down there and they discuss their theories and, you know, chat up a little bit. Isdred said he came to Syntra to find Yen.
And he said, "I really came with you because I was trying to see if a lady was going to be here. I was looking for somebody." And he goes like, "Who?" And he's talking about some, you know, Yenna. He said, "Yen."
The yen exchange was hilarious.
The amount of petty in these dudes, like what is like yo, I got the nickname. It's my nickname. Like, it's ridiculous. It's pretty funny.
Hilarious. This moment is funny, but it's also great because Geralt discovers that Yen's still alive.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he would have discovered that if he hadn't cut off Triss mad long ago.
Okay. Yes. I think that it's time for you to just move on from that exchange between Triss and Geralt when she first got to Kaer Morhen.
Yes, I will. I will let it go now. I just think it's just ridiculous that he just like is like he goes from like straight like arguing about the name to being like, oh my God, Yennefer's alive. Like, he's just like so, and I'm like, bruh, this has been like knowledge that was out there for you for mad long, yo.
It's true. If he had just, or if he had been slightly more transparent and just said to Triss, even after cutting her off, just said like, I'm in pain because Yen died and that's upsetting to me, Triss could have been like, no, she didn't. I just saw her.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
But he always has to keep it to his chest. So whatever.
Yeah.
So, just as they're chatting, he hears Ciri's scream, basically. He hears this voice, and the stelacite fragments from the crater begin to move and, like, blow right past them. And a monster emerges from this crater, but flies away before Geralt can slay it. And he tells Isred he needs to open a new portal because he has to get out of there.
Thank God.
Ciri runs back to Vesemir, who, you know, is about to give her the mutagen because now she's like, I'm all messed up. Triss says I'm evil, so might as well become a witcher. And Geralt arrives just in time, and he interrupts and tells Ciri to get ready to leave. They're out of there. I mean, I don't blame him.
Let me just say, for all the parents out there, that this is some serious grandparent overreach. Like, serious, like flagrant. Like, Vesemir, we've had our talks in the past with different fictional characters, you know, Katara. We've talked to many of them. Vesemir, I want to have a little chat. I just want to say, your job as a grandparent is just to enjoy the child, have fun, make them feel comfortable, support the parents' decisions. Like, this is not your role. Like creating them, turning them into like creating like a whole trajectory for their life and resetting the course of their path. You did that already with Geralt. You're done, sir. Like, just sit down, relax. Okay. Take your mutagen and stick to your guns.
I have such a problem with this.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes no sense to me. Like, as I said, there's a lot of parts of this episode I really enjoy. I thought, like, Yen and Yaskier together was really funny.
Great.
I really actually thought the scene, like, within the crater was really well, like, it was terrifying. It was really well designed. There's, like, all kinds of Easter eggs and stuff in the vision that Ciri and Triss see. I don't understand a lot of the motivations in this episode. I have a real problem with Yen choosing to do what she's choosing to do. I have a real issue with Vesemir. And I'm going to address the Vesemir thing first because Yen's decision really plays out in the next episode. But like, okay. So he just had this conversation with Geralt about how many witchers they've lost and how many medallions are hanging from that tree. And he's having these flashbacks to all these young boys suffering through the trials of grasses. Why would he inflict this on Ciri, especially without discussing it with her guardian? Like, it doesn't. Ciri is a little girl. Yes, she looks older this season, but she's still supposed to be like a teenager. She is too young and too traumatized to make this decision. And the difference between Ciri and the witchers who became the little boys who became witchers, I should say, is they didn't have anybody. These were kids who were essentially turned over to become witchers because they were abandoned. Ciri has Triss, she has Geralt, she has him, she has Lambert, she has Cohen, she has all the other witchers. Why is he doing, like, I don't understand this. Also, not for nothing, you raised this last episode, but Ciri's a girl. Like, they haven't used this mutagen on a girl before. How does Vesemir even know what's going to happen? I found this deeply upsetting because he's willing to risk her life over his mourning about Eskal and she's traumatized. She lost her entire family. She lost her entire city. Like, she doesn't have anywhere to go, and she's making a really rash decision.
Yeah. I mean, I agree 110% with everything you just said. And it doesn't, it's so hard because I guess they needed a way to make these characters have something to do, but just the way that they're writing this in this particular thing, Yen's motivations, Vesemir's motivations, they seem a little off in comparison to what I know of these characters. So, I mean, to this point in my exploration of this world, it did open up a really great moment that Geralt reading those Chicken Soup of the Teenage Soul books, he really had a great moment. You know, unlike Azrael, failure as a man, failure as a father, who said terrible shit to our girl Lyra as he was getting on the aircraft and went away.
He said, "You're not special."
You're not special.
Everybody's, I mean,
literally, literally the opposite of that. Geralt goes, "You're already enough, Cirilla. You are extraordinary." And Ciri is stopped in her tracks. Like, she doesn't even know how to take that. Like, he understands more and more every day, like, that he's here with her for a reason, that she's special, and that there's something that she's here to do. He doesn't quite know all of the answers, but he keeps trying to hit home to her, you know, hey, Ciri, stop. Like, stop looking for something outside of yourself. You are already enough. You don't even know your potential yet. And it means something to her, and it means something to me as an audience watcher. I just was like, I was stopped. I was like, wow, the way he says it to her is beautiful. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most beautiful thing from this season is just how much Geralt loves her immediately, mm-hmm. and is a character who really struggles with, like, grappling with his humanity sometimes. I find that deeply moving. I just mm-hmm. wish that there was, like, another way to get there without making Vesemir do this incredibly foolish and somewhat reckless thing.
Yeah, and him taking this step ends up, as we find out later, playing out, you know, where it, you know, doesn't, like, it's not like the mutagen, like, just, you know, as we're going to get into, stays put, and there's problems with that. And he's playing a little bit too free, and Geralt, rightfully so, doesn't even give eye contact to him. Just like, I can't even look at you, I can't even talk to you, I can't look at you, I'm just leaving, I'm out of here.
Yeah, he's obviously pretty pissed. I mean, this is, like, what we've learned is the fastest way to piss off Geralt is to put Ciri in any kind of danger.
Yeah.
So the last thing that really of note that really happens in that episode is that Cahir arrives in Syntra and nobody recognizes him until Frangela comes along.
Oh, Cahir. So
which must have been a really humbling moment when Philandriel was like, wait, what? Who are you? You have to go through the checkpoint, bro.
And Dara shows up. Dara shows up with the armor. Like, he's like welcome home to Zintria. I'm like, oh, wow, look at this. Look at Dara.
Dara had a whole glow up.
He did. He did. And oddly enough, man, even in the next, like, when I'm going to talk about, I know we're moving on. But yo, do the elves have hair growth, like, abilities, or, like, are they able, do they have, like, you know, were they out here, like, the originators of the hair weave? Because Dara shows up with a short afro, And then in the next episode, he's out here with a braided, like locks, like down to his back. Like, I was like, yo, what? How did that happen?
Also, it's only been a few months. I just want to say, I know that we have to suspend disbelief, but Dara looks so grown, and it's only been a few months since we saw him last. It's like, wild. It's not been that long. It's crazy to me.
It's super wild.
They grow up
it's
so quick, wild. Even when they're elves and they age slowly.
even when they're elves and they age slowly, exactly. So Ciri and Geralt, in the next episode, are attacked by the same monster that he saw escape from the monolith. During the attack, Roach is wounded so badly that Roach cannot be saved. Let's take a moment. Let's pour one out for the greatest horse in any of our stories, Roach.
This is the most upsetting thing that happens this season.
It's tough.
Roach, we will truly miss you. You were a good horse. In the video game, you just show up wherever we need you. We don't even have to take you. We don't have to ride you somewhere. You just show up. You're a magical horse, literally.
Yep. It's rough. It's rough to see.
It's also like, all jokes aside, Roach was Geralt's constant companion. I mean, in the first episode, we laughed about how he was struggling with Ciri and he was talking to Roach about it. Roach is, I think the first time we hear Geralt speak in the series, he's speaking to Roach.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of tough that Roach is gone like that. But that monster, he found out that wasn't going to be that was the last casualty of his life that he was going to take, because Geralt jumps off of a cliff, catches him on the side of the wing, and slices him, misplacing his sword somehow away. But he slices him wide open and kills this monster. Like, he was pissed. Like, you don't kill my best friend and get away with it.
She was such a good horse.
Such a good horse. Such a good horse.
And I feel so bad for Ciri, because she's watched so many people die for her, right?
Yeah.
Or die because of her. And she clearly feels responsible, even though it wasn't her fault.
Yeah, no, she just feels like everywhere she goes, there's like death happening. And, you know, to her point, I mean, not that this is true, but back at Kaer Morhen, Rance attacks. Rance somehow finds Kaer Morhen and attacks Triss and Vesemir, knocking out Vesemir and then stealing the vial of mutagen that they made with Cirilla's blood. So this is now starting to spin out of control. Somebody now has, you know, the powerful blood that we know that Cirilla has and what it can do. Somebody else has it now. In Syntra, tensions grow between Frangilla and Kahir, who believe she's lost sight of their general mission, that they're supposed to be going after Cirilla. He knows that in war, tough decisions must be made, but that he doesn't begrudge her hers, but that she needs to get back on track, right?
So let Geralt me tell you something. Let Kahir come and talk to me like this after he just spent weeks in chains. Son, you got caught. Like,
exactly.
I'm sorry. I was over here trying to make something of a disaster, a battle.
Also, I got us a whole other army of people who are outcast to everybody else. I just got them to come out the mountains and brought them in. And now I just re-upped our forces that were wiped out over at Sodden Hill. Like Nilfgaard is not really popping like that after the Sodden Hill massacre.
Okay. He should know that, though, because that's where he got caught.
Exactly.
She's so much nicer than me, because I would have been dunking on him left and right. Like, well, now that you're out of shackles, sir, maybe you would like to catch up.
Oh, she don't stay nice. We know that. I mean, we ain't gonna say what happens, but no. Don't get Freddy twisted. She came alive. She came to play. She's like, okay, all right, cool. She's just calm. She's just patient. She's patient with hers.
Hmm. I would have still told him off. But anyway, yeah, you're right. Should. You're right. You got to play the long game. You're right.
She does. She definitely does. So Geralt decides that him and Cirilla are going to head back to the Temple of Melitele, where he studied as a child. Yes, he was a child too, he says to Cirilla at some point. And we meet one of my faves, Neneca.
Oh, she's the best.
Oh, she's great. She's absolutely great. She's going to instruct her in controlling her chaos. Neneca tells Geralt that the situation with Ciri is like, well, how does she put it? She says, I don't see a way here that you don't get fucked. Okay? like that's it. It's really not great. Kings want her. Thousands have died for her. She's a child of destiny. You can't do anything about any of this. Yen then shows up to Melitele and looking for Ciri. But she finds Geralt instead. The two of them have a great, I mean great, almost unicorn-worthy, great reunion.
It's so good.
Yeah.
How is this possible?
I don't care. He introduces her then to Cirilla after they kiss. After Cirilla walks in, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, damn. And she updates him about Yaskier, but soon notices that she's nervous about something in a later scene. I do want to take a second here just to shout out what I said earlier in the episode. Very, very amazing conversation that happens between Ciri, Yen, and Geralt, to which Yen is talking to Ciri about her love of unicorns, and to which she talks about how it mysteriously disappeared, and Geralt has a very nice comeback, and he even tells her about running into her dear friend, another one of her dear friends.
Is this a good time to talk about the origin of this episode title? Because it is truly worthy. So this episode title is taken from a letter that Yen writes to Geralt in the book after he writes to her and requests her help with Cirilla, where I guess he sent his letter and, was like, dear friend, and Yen just ruthlessly makes fun of him. She's just like, well, since I'm your friend, I guess I'll do you this favor, friend. It's really, I can't do it justice. If you haven't read the book, it's totally worth reading it just for this letter. It's really good.
Yeah, and that's in Blood of Elves, so that's great. That's awesome. She is taken back when he introduces her to Ciri as a dear friend. You know what I mean? Like, and it's so, yeah, no, I love it. I love that that they kind of like wink, wink, nod, nod to that chapter. That's great. So Yen, is a little bit nervous, and Geralt picks up on it. And before he can really ask her why she's there, and get a clear answer, Reince and his goons show up. To which, they roll up, hey, firefucker.
It was such a great moment. So good.
It's very, very, very good. Oh, man. So Yen manages to get in. So basically, Geralt trusts, Yen to take Ciri and, go into another room to make sure they can't get to her. To which he starts fighting to protect Ciri. Great. Epic fight scene. I mean, Geralt brutally is wiping out this crew. Like, he's not even messing around. Like, it reminds you, throwback to the Butcher of Blaviken days. Like, damn, he's wrecking some people.
Mm-hmm.
And, at this point, Yen is, Reince is trying to get in the room with them, and Yen talks to Ciri about controlling her magic and opening a portal because she sees that the globe that she's been trying to work is glowing. And Yen is like, well, that only responds to magic, and that's not my magic, because obviously Yen does not have magic at this point. So Geralt tries to stop them before they go through, but Yen tells him that she has to go through it. and the heartbreak in this man's eyes when Yen goes through that portal.
I mean, the heartbreak in my eyes, because I was like, okay, so in watching this episode, I was thoroughly sure that Yen was going to double cross the Deathless Mother and not do this. I just couldn't believe it. Like, I wouldn't allow myself to believe it.
Yeah.
But that's not what's going on here. I mean, before she even gets to this point, she's trying to get Cirilla alone. Like, there's a point where Cirilla's like, I'm going to go to bed. She does not go to bed. She goes to wander around, which is how she ends up in front of Reince and his goons anyway. Yeah. But Yen is like, oh, I'll take you. Because she's trying to separate her from Geralt. It's really heartbreaking. Like, this is tough.
And Ciri's like, no, I'm good. I can go to my own room. I mean, kind of like seems like she's encouraging her to stay and chill with Geralt. But there's also a little undertone of that, like, I don't trust you yet. You know what I mean? Like, totally. Like, not yet. Until later on, you know? It's really rough. It's rough on Yen's part. I definitely feel like... Ciri gets a couple of good shots in too early, like in the fight. Showed her training has been paying off. She got a good shot in until they had to use magic when Reince's people tried to attack her. It was really good.
Oh yeah, Ciri's feisty. She's not quite a witcher, but she's not a terrible fighter.
No, agreed. So then the next thing that we end up having going on is Istrid continues his research, right? And he's at the law firm of Codringer and Fenn,
who are known... Love these two. Love them.
Oh, yeah, they're great. They're known for gathering information. He comes over there to learn more about a witcher, a monolith, and a mysterious girl. Like, what would all of this have in common? Why is this connected? So they give him like a pretty interesting look. It's pretty great. I love it.
Yeah, they seem to know already. I was like, damn, they really in the know.
Yeah, they are in the know. They really do. They really understand what's going on. So cut to Francesca's daughter is now in the process of being born. And she is born. But she isn't breathing. Frangilla picks up the baby, holds the baby to her chest, and the baby begins to cry. She tells them that she used no magic. She just warmed her up. And she comes out, announces the birth of the baby, and the elves celebrate the birth of this child until dawn. Kahir, of course, uses this as a weapon against Frangilla and lets her know that the Emperor is on his way. You know, he's been, you know, the White Flame's been dropping letters in the mail to Kahir, to which the Hutt whispers to her, and reminds her about first them taking her power, then them taking away her freedom. Dara gives a report to Dijkstra's owl. Somehow, he's put it together that Nilfgaard is after Ciri. We see Triss, after she's left Kaer Morhen, portals back to Aretuza and tells Taseya about Ciri and that she is going to be the one who destroys the world. Damn it, Triss. Damn it.
This is hard for me to wrap my mind around. It just feels very much like she could have had a conversation with Geralt before she went and told the Brotherhood. Because telling Taseya is telling the Brotherhood. And I don't really understand what Triss is doing here. I guess she's so alarmed that she has to take some action, but it's I don't understand it, Triss.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's a little bit, you know, this is where things start to turn for me with Triss, because I just feel like you said, she could have talked to Geralt. I also feel like this is like when Ciri and Geralt leave Kaer Morhen in the book, Triss goes with them. So they've made a very interesting decision here for Triss not to go, right? For Triss not to be on this journey with them leaving. And so there's a reason for that. Obviously, they want the Brotherhood to know. That's why they decided to do that. But it's a little bit for me, like, kind of like, well, where was that conversation? When Geralt left, he was obviously pissed off at Vesemir. We don't know what he said to Triss. All that must have happened off screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think what needed to happen here was they need to figure out how to relay this information to the Brotherhood through a trustworthy source. And Triss was the best way to do that. So I'm okay with that part of it. It's really hard for me to understand what Triss is doing here, but maybe it will become apparent at a later point in time. I guess these two episodes are tough for me just because I have a hard, except for Fringilla, I have a hard time understanding what's motivating a lot of the characters. Like, obviously, Geralt is trans, you know, completely transparent, which is, it's Cirilla that's motivating him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard for me to understand the decisions that Yen makes, that Vesemir makes, and that Triss makes. These are the decisions they make. And I think episode 6 is one of the strongest episodes of the entire season. I mean, I cried. I cheered. I cried again when Geralt and Yen reunited. Then I cried of joy when Francesca's daughter was born. And then when Yen walked through that portal with Ciri, I was devastated again. So, yeah. Like, it was very effective in terms of... you know, all the emotions that it brought out, but it's the decisions that they're making are really tough. And also the politics are really unclear here. But what I do like about this, even though the politics are a little bit messy, like you have all these factions, the Brotherhood, whoever Reince is working for, we're not really clear yet. Obviously Dijkstra is still in play because the owl is there. Like there's all of this, all these like political moves happening. It does clarify what's going on with Cirilla and the Elder Blood, though. So really I does. Do like it... that they, instead of being real, what they've been doing in sort of hiding like what's going on with Cirilla or hinting at it. I shouldn't say hiding because they just haven't been clear on it. It's pretty clear by the end of this episode what is going on with Ciri and who she is.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I mean, she basically, like, you know, they when Istrid is trying to understand, like, right, what's going on, and he goes to Conringer of Fen and asks the question, they tell her that the girl is Cirilla of Syntra, right? Like, that's who it is. And that is pretty... like clear, okay, we know that. But then they go even deeper later in the episode, like in this episode, and they kind of talk about they start talking about what's the connection, and then we get some information more about Lara Darren and the whole thing that's there and kind of like some of the meaning. So I thought that going through the genealogy records and Fen basically saying, using the quote, and when the humans proved hostile, bringing death and destruction, multiplying and infesting their lands, the elves built a weapon to destroy them, and kind of giving that information and who that is. That's pretty big. That's pretty, pretty, pretty big in comparison. And then to hear the clarification that it wasn't a weapon, it was a mispronunciation, and that what they really built was a warrior, and they all have the realization that what's being spoken about is Lara Doran. That is on the heels of seeing what we saw in Ciri's vision. Man, it's pretty clear where we're going here now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I think they did a good job of not necessarily revealing it all. I think there's still a little bit of murkiness, but of making it pretty clear that this gene that runs through the women in Syntra comes from Lara Doran.
Yeah.
So there's no more confusion about that. It's right there, clearly spelled out for us. I do, later we'll talk a little bit more about the different versions of Lara Doran, because like the humans think of her one way and the elves think of her another way. But I thought it was really good to just kind of lay out some basic facts about Ciri's like genealogy and the fact that like,
yeah,
Calanth was clearly hiding this gene. She didn't want people to know about it.
Yeah, and I think this is interesting because, like, this is where Ciri and Vesemir have this conversation, right? Where Vesemir says, you know, sometimes we hate the things, you know, we basically hate the things that we can't change about ourselves. And he's kind of like reading into why Calanth would have hated the elves, because Ciri's like, my grandmother hated the elves. Like, why would she hate something that is inside of our bloodline or in me? My personal theory, which, you know, is that Calanthe had to look like there was this prophecy that everyone knows about. And there is this story that you eloquently went over with Falca's Rebellion and everything. And you hearing like with the two children which one is in their bloodline, you know, the person who's going to bring destruction or the person who's going to bring life, right? Who's going to like save people and heal the world. So the reality of it is that Triss is like confused by this as well in the vision. I feel like she just automatically goes to, oh yeah, this is the person who's going to destroy the world versus like the actual person who could be the salvation of the world. And Calanthe, I think, was trying her hardest with that kind of murkiness in like who was who to look like, okay, we are, she's trying to cover it up. She wanted to like look like fit in so that it wasn't, other kingdoms didn't bring war to them. I think that's my personal theory. Like, I'm wildly speculating, but my personal theory is that she's like, I gotta look the part. I don't want people thinking that we're like we have this elven bloodline and then we become a target.
100 Yeah, I think that I think Calanthe understands something that I think all kings and queens come to understand, and all people in power, that it's fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Northern Kingdoms have such a hostile relationship with elves that she could hardly go around bragging about her elven blood. I mean, I think one of the first things we learned about Calanthe was in, I think, episode 2 or 3 of season 1, which was that she is hostile to elves. She's one of the most hostile of the Northern monarchies. So I think that you're 100% right that she wanted to hide it because she was worried about that legacy. And I think also this episode gives us a little information, which is that Pavetta and Dooney were also aware that their child could be the child of this prophecy. And that scared them as well, because they knew that people were going to come after the child.
Yeah.
I think what I'm a little confused about is, who did they think was going to come after Cirilla? And then why did it take so long? You know, obviously, they both perished in trying to get away. But whoever knew about Cirilla and was concerned didn't do anything for like 14 years.
And remember,
because Nilfgaard is really the first people that we know of to make a move on Cirilla. So it couldn't have been that widespread of a secret. But I think some of that will be revealed later as well.
Yeah, and remember in season 1 when they're talking about when the Brotherhood and they're at Aretusa and they're talking about sending the mages different places. Remember that Calanthe's like dad, he didn't, and many of, they didn't have mages in the Cintran court. They didn't keep like Malsat goes over there as like because of everything that happens when Geralt and them are there, he stays. But they didn't have like a mage at the point at that time. And, you know, why not have a mage? Why? Because your bloodline is super connected to the originator of chaos, like the originator of the elder blood. Like, so to me, like, I think that they know more than what they're letting on. I think Calanthe knew more. And so what's interesting to me and what you're saying is, why does Dooney and Pavetta not feel like they can go to Calanthe, or is it one or the other, to go to Calanthe to tell her what they're concerned about happening, what they think about Cirilla? Like, why was that?
Yeah, why are they sneaking off like thieves in the night? Yeah, it's a little that part's a little confusing to me. Since you brought up Malsak, I just want to say he still has my favorite line of this entire series.
What is that?
I haven't seen you since the plague.
I know, I was waiting for you to say. I just wanted you to say. That's what you say.
I can't wait to be able to say that.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. What are you talking about? Yeah, that's me too. I mean, like, legitimately, like, one of these days, we're going to be at a feast somewhere. We're going to see someone that we haven't seen since, I don't know, 2019. And we'll be like, oh, such and such. I haven't seen you since the plague. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
My second favorite line is definitely Geralt's from the first episode when he's like, I've lived through multiple end of world events.
It's all horseshit. Yeah, it's good. That's so good. Too. Very good stuff. Yeah, so, I mean, this is all really, really, really good stuff. And I think that some other information we get here is that there's different versions and different pieces about how people understand the conjunction. The conjunction of the spheres.
I found that really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was really cool. I mean, we hear earlier, right? Like when Istrid and Geralt are speaking, like he's talking about that monsters didn't exist before the conjunction. The monoliths were thought to be the points of impact, but perhaps they're the conduits between the spheres. He believes, right, that the surge of energy that was created during the sacking of Centra caused the monoliths to communicate with each other. He had been noticing that they could communicate with each other even before that, right? And Istrid says that their understanding of the conjunction must be incorrect, that they didn't merge these spheres. They collided and then separated again. And that the original spheres are still there, but separate, and the monoliths call to them, are calling to them. So that's one take on Istrid's side. But then Vesemir also, in the episode at another point, says another thing about the conjunction of the spheres. He says, the monsters collided too. Mages weaponized the monsters and tried to use them. He calls them crazy because, you know, they didn't know what they were talking about. And then the monsters started to destroy everything 300 years ago. And so mages then weaponized men and they made witchers to save humanity from extinction. So here you have these different portions who, you know, oftentimes a lot of these stories, there's grains of truth in all of them that end up kind of creating a thread. But it's very interesting to me to hear these different takes on the beginnings of this world.
I love this. I thought this was, in my opinion, these two, they're not contradictory because both of these things could be true. But we've heard so little about what actually happened in the conjunction that I truly appreciated getting two takes on what could have happened and what they believe to have happened. Because it's mentioned throughout the series, but it's never really nailed down of like what actually happened. And obviously, we've talked about this before, Netflix has another show coming out that's probably going to show us what happened. Mm-hmm. But I loved this. I thought this was really great information. And I love Istrid's version of this, which is that they didn't, because I had always imagined that the spears had all just kind of smashed into each other, creating one, which was a continent. Was how I understood it last season. Since then, I've learned a little bit more because you do actually learn some of this in the playing The Witcher 3. But like when I first saw The Witcher, I thought, OK, all of these, there were all these different worlds and then they smashed into each other, creating one world. And that's the world we're in now. And the known world is a continent. Maybe there's, you know, maybe it's kind of like Westeros and Essos where there's more out there. We just don't know what it is. But the known world to our main characters is a continent. I never really thought about the notion that the conjunction was, as Istrid said, which is like these spheres all smashed together and then separated again. And on all of the different spheres, there could be some version of what's happening on their sphere happening. Like maybe there's humans in a place that there shouldn't be. Maybe there's elves in a place that they shouldn't be. You know, like I never even considered all of this.
Yeah.
So I really love this.
Sorry,
yeah.
Okay.
What?
I said we have confirmation now too. Lauren's been out here. Lauren Hisdrich, the showrunner, has been out here like telling people, you know, what's going to happen with this Blood Origin show a little bit, kind of talking about that, like, you know, the 1200 is a set 1200 years before The Witcher, and that, you know, it's going to tell the story that basically was lost in the world. That basically we're trying to sort out here with these different pieces of the story, and that basically it's going to talk about like how the very first Witcher was created and what pivotal events happen in the conjunction of the spheres. Like, she's been giving interviews and saying that this is going to kind of be unraveled some in Blood Origin, you know, that basically, you know, that in the world that we're telling in The Witcher, it's kind of believed that, you know, humans brought civilization to the elves. But they're going to probably flip that on its head. You know, that's going to, like, it's going to show that it's really actually a different story to how that went. So there's going to be some interesting things in this other show that, man, I'm super excited for now based on what you're talking about. This little piece that they're doing here of, like, man, there's some mystery around how this really all played out in the conjunction is really going to help it's already helped my interest in this other show.
Yeah, mine too. I'm hyped because we didn't know for sure when the other show was coming. It's coming this year.
Yep.
So stay tuned for a release date. I'm really excited about seeing it because a lot of this is not really fully fleshed out in the original works. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of space to grow and build here. So I'm hyped.
Yeah. So let's talk about, we got some other things to get to. Let's talk about Cirilla and this pull that she's feeling from every one of the monsters that come out of the monolith or the other monsters that are trying to hurt her. Like, what is that about?
It's a little creepy, right? So we just had Triss completely melt down and freak out because she believes Ciri to be something dangerous, right? And now Ciri is telling Geralt that this monster that just killed Roach looked her dead in the face and was one of the most terrifying monsters I've seen. Can I just say that all the monsters this season have been really scary?
Really terrifying.
And she didn't think that the monster wanted to hurt her. And what I really like about these little snippets of dialogue is that Geralt is getting, he's almost like a detective. He's getting information, gathering it, and he's going to draw a conclusion. And this is a big piece of the conclusion that he eventually comes to in the final couple of episodes, which is that these monsters are attacking Ciri, but they're not trying to hurt Ciri. They're drawn to her for some reason, and it's not clear why.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to kind of see that we're getting little tidbits like this. And then, like you said, Geralt's like, you're right. Geralt's like a detective. I mean, it kind of felt like that throughout, but he's really, you're really starting to see him get his chops up. Maybe it's that he's sniffing lilacs and gooseberries.
Oh, I love it. I just love, okay. So when I think this is, I enjoyed this thoroughly as a game player because one of the first quests in The Witcher 3 is basically you're looking for Yen and she smells like lilacs and gooseberries. And I wondered when she walked into that room, he thought it was Cirilla at first and then he just senses her. And you could see it either way. Mm-hmm. Like maybe he just senses her presence because, and also obviously he knows how her, like what her heart sounds like and all of that. But I also just wondered, was it that she walked in and he could smell the lilacs and gooseberries?
I think I want to go there. I want to go there in my mind because I think like it's such a beautiful scene. The moment, the expression on his face when she walks in and he goes from telling Ciri he'll be right there and wanting privacy to like stopping in his tracks and realizing that she's there. It's absolutely beautiful.
What do you make of the fact that he makes no attempt to find her?
After he finds out that she's alive,
mm-hmm.
I think that he's happy to know the information that she's alive, but he realizes that Geralt is duty bound. He's a very dutiful person, so I think he's like, you know, even Cirilla makes a mention of that, like you wouldn't care what I chose if it wasn't for the fact that you had your duty, because he's like, he's making sure that Ciri's okay, and that's the most important thing to him. So being there to get Ciri what she needs is more important than whatever itch he feels he has to scratch for trying to find Yen. It just so happens that Yen finds him, and it makes him extremely happy.
My headcanon is that he was going to leave Siri with Ninica and go look for Yen. I'm just going with that.
I could see that.
I'm just going with that. There's no evidence of that, but I'm just going to go with that.
I could see that. No, but I could see that. I could see, I mean, because we hope that, like Siri really needs someone like Ninica, right? Like, so, like...
Yeah, and he wasn't going to stay there.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to do while Ninica is training her? I think that he was going to leave Siri there because she would be relatively safe. You know, I was going to talk a little bit more about this temple, but there's not that much to say, except that it is kind of like, Melitele is the goddess of fertility. It is kind of like a place that is revered all over the continent and especially in the Northern Kingdoms. And you just wouldn't mess with it. Like the fact that Reince and his idiot people who obviously didn't know that they were going to be fighting a witcher. The fact that they just bust in there and cause so much havoc is an anomaly. Like people don't carry weapons, you know, people don't come there with, there's no politics, there's no beef there. Yeah. Like everyone is there to either rest and recover from an injury or an illness, to learn about magic or to worship the goddess. So, you know, I think Geralt was probably going to leave her there. That's what happens in the books, and that's what makes sense. So my head canon is that he was going to go look for Yen.
I like it. I definitely like it. And, you know, Ishra went looking for something. What he found was that the elves built a warrior. That warrior's name, Lara Doran. Let's talk about, in the Oxford Academy, Lara Doran.
So last week we talked at length about Falca's Rebellion and its implications for the story. And I think this week it's finally time to talk a bit more about Lara Doran and Craganan of Lod. They were both mages from different races, which is well established. Lara was elven and Craganan was human. They fell in love and conceived a child. And it's believed that Craganan was executed, but Lara escaped, only to be later wounded and killed herself. And, you know, while she was dying, spoke a curse out onto the people who oppressed her people. So in the fifth Witcher book, Baptism by Fire, we are given the tale told from the human and elven perspectives. The human saw Lara essentially as a witch who, as she was dying, said, "And know this, my curse will hound your descendants unto the 10th generation." And we hear Fenn repeat that in this episode. The elven version is more kind, and actually it kind of was shown in the vision that Ciri had. The elven version goes like this. When Lara, now not begging for mercy for herself, but for her unborn child, caught hold of the carriage door and ordered in the order of the queen, the thuggish executioner struck a sword and hacked off her fingers. And when a severe frost descended from the night, Lara breathed her last onto the forest hilltop, giving birth to a tiny daughter whom she protected with the remains of warmth that still flickered in her. And though she was surrounded by the blizzard, the night and the winter, spring suddenly bloomed on the hilltop when Fenowood flowers blossomed. Probably some version of both of these stories is true, but I think what we saw in Ciri's vision was the elven version of this story, which was a wounded Lara in a desolate place, cradling her recently born child. The show seems to be confirming that Lara's magical gene has been passed down through the women of Sintra. As you recall, last week, Lara's daughter, Rhiannon, was adopted by the Queen of Redania and is Cirilla's fourth great-grandmother. So I'm glad we finally have confirmation, finally, after many, many episodes of it being hinted, that Lara Doran is the ancestor of Cirilla, the lion cub of Sintra.
The lion cub of Sintra. Oh, the last rose with blood upon her thorns. You know, like, it's great. And I gotta say, like, it's really interesting to hear when you're talking about, you know, that the elven's version of the story, you hear little pieces of Ithilien's prophecy, right? Like you hear little pieces, like the wolf blizzard, the like, mm-hmm. like you hear that. So like, it's really interesting. We'll see. I mean, as it starts to unfold more, we'll get more into it. And as everything, you know, I think like we're gonna find that everything happens for a reason in this story, and that nothing's accidentally happening. And that you know, it's interesting that before Ciri is confronted at the temple, that she's actually reading a passage from Ithilien's prophecy. So mm-hmm. it's really, really profound.
Well, I am curious to find out what Ciri's reaction is going to be to learning more about her heritage.
Yeah.
Obviously she knows that she's a child of elder blood. Vesemir told her that. I'm curious to see how she takes that heritage and it impacts like her choices. And I don't know. I think we're going to see Ciri really go through some things in the next few seasons, because this is a heavy burden for a little girl or a young woman to manage. And there are so many competing forces trying to vie for her mm-hmm. and for different reasons. And we should, you know, we'll talk more about this either in the wrap up episode or next week, just about who all those factions are. Cause I think that it's a little confusing. I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, you know, like, what is Dijkstra's role? Why is he interested in Cirilla? Like, what, you know, and I don't think that the show is 100% clear about that, but there's a lot of people after this little girl for reasons that are never good. Like Geralt was the one pure of heart reason to go after her. Everyone else wants to use her for something.
And who are those guys in the clouds? Oh yeah. More on that later. More on that later. And that vision was crazy. So many things. And then the guys, the Witcher's telling her, go back. Don't even go any further. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot here. A lot here that's going to keep...
I do. So I have a request for our listeners, bringing up the guys in the clouds. I would really like to talk about who they are in our final episode for like our final coverage of episodes, rather than in the spoiler episode, which would be the wrap up. If you have an objection to that, can you let it be known? Because it is a little bit of a spoiler if we talk about who they are. So if you want that to be something that gets covered next season, rather than talking about who they are this season, then drop me a note in the kinfolklore email, kinfolklore@gmail.com, or a DM on Twitter, kinfolklore pod.
Yeah, definitely do that. And you can also do that over at the Instagram, or also on our Facebook, you know, Facebook as well.
If I don't hear from y'all, that's on y'all. Yeah. You get in the spoiler.
We're gonna talk
I'm just
about
saying.
Them. Those guys in the clouds, they come up. They're definitely part of our coverage next week, so that's it. We're gonna leave it there.
Yeah. I mean, if y'all wanna hear about them, you're either gonna need to fast forward through that part of the episode or make your voice known. Because I could save it for the spoiler episode. I just wanna know where people are at. I don't wanna like spoil too much for folks, but I feel like they're in there, right?
We should talk about who they are.
It's kind of weird that we haven't really talked about it, you know?
No, I definitely didn't want to like not say anything about them, but I don't want to say too much in this episode. So with that, please let us know. We are so grateful for this journey that we've been on together. Thanks for all the feedback. You know, even when you guys are like not happy about my Triss Marigold takes, I'm still happy.
That was a spicy take. I wasn't expecting the feedback on.
I loved it. I loved hearing everybody was, and people were mortified about the fact that we were saying that this should have went down. Like, listen,
No. Let's be clear. You were saying that it should go down.
Okay, yes. I was saying it should go down. Just to be clear, as one of our good friends mention, I was not saying that this should be the end of the road for both of them, that they should stay together. I was just saying, you know, it's called a Kir Morhen. You know, warm each other up. That's all. All right, well, that'll do it for our coverage today, this week. We'll see you next week. Let us know. Leave reviews. Hit us up on all of the places, the outlets that you listen to, and leave some 5-star reviews. Also, hit us up on our social media channels, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.